Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Today's lesson is the road to discovery.
Like my new Toyota RAV4 Platinum. With the Entune Premium JBL Audio with integrated navigation and app suite, I'm always finding someplace new.
Trust your heart and your feet will open a new way.
Like my RAV4, it has a hands-free, foot-activated power liftgate.
Class dismissed.
Anybody want to ride in my RAV4?
Me! I mean, I humbly accept your offer.
Well, come on.
When you're driven by discovery, you find adventure. The 2017 RAV4 Platinum. Toyota. Let's go places.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast, folks. It is Wednesday, November 2nd. Typically, the esteemed James Anderson and I record on Thursdays, but James is escaping the Midwest, even though it's like 70 degrees here in Madison this week, to go to Arizona to do baseball stuff.
Try that on.
That's what we're being told. Whoa, baseball. What exactly are you doing in Arizona as you're cheating on basketball?
Well, there's the Arizona Fall League, which is a kind of extension of the minor league baseball season, and we'll be, you know, scouting some players there. There's a decent amount of top 50, top 100 guys there this year, and then also just kind of, you know, socializing with a lot of the other people in the fantasy baseball industry, a lot of, you know, our friends at other publications that we only get to see once a year, and, you know, we'll be doing stuff with there's the First Pitch Arizona convention, and then also just, you know, some poker games and some samplings of beers that people bring in. It's usually a pretty good time.
Real who's who of fantasy baseball industry.
It really is. It is a who's who.
Nice. So what's your World Series pick for tonight before we get into some round ball talk?
A lot
of folks are back in the Cubs.
So I think the Cubs would be my pick, just because I think I don't see enough in the Indians' favor to not pick the Cubs. But if the Indians are able to get through, say, four innings with it being a tie game or with the lead, then I would swing it to them, just because I don't think the Cubs are going to be able to score on their late inning arms. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know enough about baseball to make an educated prediction. I have watched most of this postseason, though. My good friend and roommate is a big Cubs fan, so
yeah,
I'm getting educated.
You've chosen to play, yep, or to stay at home and watch World Series games, yep, instead of playing basketball on, yep, Tuesday nights. So
yeah,
that seems
like a good decision.
That's like the upset of the entire postseason.
Right, exactly. Speaking of basketball, the NBA is going on. We're a week into the season now. Basically, I wanted to give you a chance to, one, make fun of me for a prediction that I made that's looking really bad right now, and two, gloat about two guys who you like who are playing really well right now. So we'll start with me, Klay Thompson.
Where you said this again, too, because it wasn't on one of these pods.
No.
Otherwise, I would have made fun of you.
It doesn't really matter where I said it. I said it. Okay. I said that I thought Klay Thompson was a nice dark horse candidate to win the scoring title.
Sure.
We're now four games into the season, and Klay Thompson is averaging 16.8 points per game. That does not lead the league. That's nowhere close. That's about half of what he needs, mm-hmm, to be leading the league. He is now 3 of 28, mm-hmm, from beyond the arc. That's not very good. And, yeah, I'm not feeling super great about that prediction right now, but he's going to have to come around at some point, right? Right?
Oh, yeah. Right? No, I mean, I think he's easily like a top five shooter in the league, so that's I don't even care about like what he's shooting right now, but your prediction Definitely.
Yeah, you do.
Looks
care,
it looks even worse now than it did when you made
it. Yeah. We were debating right now, like, what does Klay Thompson have a better chance to do? Win the scoring title or win the MVP? Maybe win the MVP.
I mean,
I don't know.
The thing is like it's so clear on that team right now, at least to me, like kind of how everything's sort of shaken out, where you have Durant and Pachulia, Curry as the clear top two scorers. I think Klay's going to settle in as the very, very clear number three scorer. And Draymond Green, much to my, like I was kind of expecting his rebounds and his assists to be down this year. Actually, I don't even know if he's even going to lose any ground in those two categories.
No, if anything, he's gaining ground.
Yeah, so he's not going to be doing any scoring at all, really, but the assists and the rebounds that he's going to get as kind of the only guy that's consistently close to the hoop and not spreading out to the wings to spot up for threes is going to make him, you know, he's going to remain valuable even though he's not scoring and he's definitely not shooting it very well.
Do you think Draymond's okay with that? I mean, he took three shots last night against the Portland Trailblazers, but did stuff the stat sheet, I should say, pretty much everywhere else. So, I mean, like I said, the rebounding totals are up. The assist totals are up. He had 9 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. So typical Draymond, really, outside of the scoring. I mean, we saw the last February on national TV, he's screaming in the locker room, "I'm not a robot," you know, because he didn't like, you know, kind of how he was getting the ball, where he was getting the ball, when he was getting the ball. I mean, do you think now Draymond understands that with the addition of Durant, this is his new reality? Maybe not three shots, but, you know, most nights it could only be 7, 8, 9 shots.
I think that he, at least for now, is of the mindset that he's going to do whatever it takes for them to win. And, like, I think he'd like to be kind of doing both. He'd like for them to be winning and for him to be scoring a bit more, but the worst case scenario for him, and I think he kind of knows this, is for them to not live up to expectations and for people to be able to point to him as one of the reasons why. So, you know, as long as he's kind of constantly flirting with triple doubles every night, you know, I think that is usually going to be enough to kind of make up for the fact that he's no longer a threat to score 20 points.
I think the fact that they lost in the finals last year probably makes him more okay with this. And like, had they won and we're going for a three-peat, I think then it's easier to sit back and look and, like, I'm not getting my numbers. You know, now it's back to, okay, we have to prove that we're the best again. It's all about winning. So in that respect, I think losing the finals, you know, it's never a good thing. But, you know, from Draymond's individual perspective, that might be good for how he adjusts to the addition of Durant. Also in that game, Jake Layman made his debut, the second-round pick out of Maryland, someone that you've been very vocal about in saying that he's going to be a good NBA player. 6 of 8 from the field, 5 of 7 from three. He has more threes in this game than Klay Thompson and Buddy Hield have combined on the year in 42 attempts. Jake Layman, Hall of Famer or not Hall of Famer?
Not a Hall of Famer, but
yet.
A guy that, look, like, he only played 8 minutes in that game. So it's not, he's not to the point where he's played his way into being a big part of their rotation, but just kind of in what he did last night, he looks the part of an NBA player. And that was kind of always my stance with him, is that, you know, if you get a rotation player in the second round, that's a really good draft pick. And I think that he is a rotation player long-term on a decent team. Like, he's clearly got NBA range. He looks really comfortable out there. He gets his shot off, quickly, doesn't need a ton of space. He can do it a little bit off the dribble. He can catch and shoot. He's also pretty athletic, just good at running the floor. So those are kind of, that's what he brings to the table. He's not an amazing defender, but he is athletic enough to guard some threes. You know, some bigger fours would probably give him some trouble. But I mean, I think that's a really deep team. I mean, it's going to be hard, I think, for him, even if he keeps shooting like this, to ever start seeing more than 20 minutes a game unless people start getting hurt. But he's, you know, a lot of teams could use a guy like this that can stretch the floor. And I think they picked up at least an asset in the second round there.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're getting that kind of production, any kind of return on a 47th overall pick, that's obviously positive. But no, I'm with you. I think even 20 minutes would be crazy. I don't know if he even gets to 10 minutes a game this year just because they already are so stacked.
There are certain teams he would be getting 20 minutes on, though. Like, I mean, put him on the Pelicans. Like,
yeah.
Is he their second leading scorer? Like, I mean, I think Tim Frazier's their second leading scorer right now. So.
Poor Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's the fact that he's probably not going to play a ton this year says more about the team he's on than how good he is.
Zach LaVine, another guy you've been maybe even more vocal about than Jake Layman. He's been the Timberwolves' best player so far. I talked with DJ this morning in the office about just how disappointed, I guess, relative to expectations I've been with Towns so far. And, you know, we're talking strictly fantasy here. I mean, he's been fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the numbers that Davis is putting up is almost what people expected from Towns, even though, you know, what Davis is doing right now is just ludicrous. But Towns has been relatively quiet. I think he's had 11 and 10 in that big win over the Grizzlies last night. But it's LaVine, who's averaging 24 points per game, over 2 assists, almost 5 rebounds. And the biggest thing for me is that he's kind of shown that the 3-point shooting last year wasn't a fluke. And again, he only has 9 attempts on the year. He's only taken, not 9 on the year. He has 22 on the year. But he's shooting 46% from 3. He was right around 38-39% last year. And that was a pretty big jump from his rookie year. So I think there was some skepticism as to whether he can keep it up. But he looks considerably better than he looked last year.
I think he's going to be a star. I think he's in a year or two, we're going to be talking about him as the second or the first shooting guard in the league. Like, I think he's got all NBA potential in a year or two. I think in a couple of years you'd take him over a guy like Clay, over a guy like Brad Beal. I just think he's that good of a scorer. If you watch him, I mean, he's got unlimited range. He can pull up really quickly off the dribble, kind of the way that a guy like Steph Curry or Damian Lillard does. Kind of the dream scenario if you're building an offense in today's NBA is a guard that can do that off the dribble. And he's just unstoppable in terms of getting to the rim, unless you just want to completely crowd the paint. Like, once he gets by his guy, he can kind of weave in and just kind of create angles to get the ball in just because of his extreme athleticism. I don't know if there's a better athlete in the league right now. He doesn't even – a lot of these aren't even dunks. He's just finding a way to get in close and then just kind of laying it in. He's been really good defensively from what I've seen. And part of the reason why I think Towns is – kind of letting some people down is just because of how good LaVine and Wiggins have been at scoring. Definitely not at distributing, especially in terms of Wiggins, but those guys have just been so efficient in terms of getting their buckets that I think it's hard to kind of tell guys that are that talented at scoring to involve the big man. And I think that's where kind of coaching comes in. You got to find a way to work the offense through Towns and use those guys as secondary pieces if you want to kind of maximize the wins you could get this season. But I think LaVine is more than capable of putting up 25 points a game.
No, I mean, with Towns, he's attempting, you know, per game, and only 3 games for the T-Wolves so far, but he's right on pace with field goal attempts where he was last season. He's taking more threes already. I don't think that's the issue. Like you said, it's just they have these other scoring options who are playing really well. I mean, Gorgui Dieng was like 7 of 8 from the field the other night too. So like, it's not that Towns is getting the ball and turning it over or missing shots. He's just not getting as many looks because they're getting quality looks elsewhere. But I will admit I've been a little bit slow to come around on LaVine. I've always liked him, and I don't know that, you know, before towards the end of last year I ever thought he'd be more than a really good starter. But it's kind of, you know, this team was kind of compared to an early OKC in a lot of ways. And, you know, they their core pieces are obviously different than Westbrook and Durant, you know, being a dynamic all-around wing and a dynamic point guard. They kind of have, you know, their Durant is Towns, their Westbrook is Wiggins. And now, to me, LaVine is kind of their Harden. And if you look, you know, the per 100 possession numbers between Harden and his final 2 years at OKC and LaVine's the last year, you know, year plus, are very, very similar. And I think with Harden, nobody knew quite how good of an all-around player he was until he went to Houston, because he didn't have to be in OKC. All of a sudden, we find out he's a top 10 passer in the league. He can average 8 assists with ease. Like, do you think we could see the same with LaVine in the scenario that he were to go to another team for whatever reason, where, you know, he goes to a bad team and they ask him to do everything and be the primary ball handler? Could he be a 23-6-7 guy?
I don't think he's that type of player. I think he would have the same kind of impact, the same kind of fanfare if he went to his own team. But I think it would be more kind of 28, 29, 30 points a game, and then like 5-5.
Which is still fine.
And you're, I mean, he's just a scorer. I mean, I think Harden, regardless of what role he's in, regardless of what team he's on, is one of the 5 or 6 best passers in the league when he's looking to involve his teammates. LaVine's not that at all. I mean, he's a very capable distributor for a two guard, but he's not a point guard, even though that's how they were trying to use him early on. Defensively, I think he's a much better player than Harden. He's got major upside there, obviously, as a guy that can guard multiple positions. The thing that I always kind of come back to with him that I think people were kind of missing the boat on is that he's a year younger than Chris Dunn. Like, that's
right
where he's at developmentally. He right now is where Chris Dunn was a year ago in terms of his, you know, career arc. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's extremely scary. Like, if this was a rookie doing what Zach LaVine's doing this season, everyone would be talking about it. But because he's been in the league for a few years, nobody's really that hyped up about it. But, I mean, he's 21 years old. What's he going to look like when he's 24 years old? Like, how many – mm-hmm. what are his numbers going to look like at that point? So,
see, well, the thing that – I think this can kind of work both ways. Like with Wiggins, or not with Wiggins, with LaVine, you know, we talked about it. He's not the distributor that Harden is. He doesn't have the kind of vision that those type of players do. But what he does have is he's the most athletic player and the most athletic guard in the NBA. And like that, I think he's finding ways to use that as more of an advantage than just dunking. I mean, he's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there are some guys in the league who never figure that out. You know, there's Gerald Greens who just kind of, it helps them a ton when they get into the lane and can finish. But LaVine uses that athleticism in other ways. It's not just verticality.
Exactly. He, like, when you're that athletic, you can get a shot off in really any situation. Like, you're just going to be able to, by putting one dribble down, you're going to be able to jump away from your defender and create space. His whole game this year has been basically layups and three-pointers, and that's going to be kind of the next genesis for him is you know, developing that mid-range game that all the great two guards have had. He just doesn't really need it because, unlike guys like Kobe and Michael Jordan, he's already a better three-point shooter than those guys ever were. So, like, it's kind of hard to –
I knew we would get our way to LaVine-Jordan comparisons.
Well, no, I'm on it. I'm being honest here. Like, you know, how do you kind of sell him on developing that, you know, 15 to 18 foot game when he's hitting three pointers at a 44% clip and getting to the rim with ease? I mean, those are like, that's what you want is three pointers and layups. And that's what he's giving you a ton of. So that'll be just kind of interesting to sort of see, because there is a lot more room for him to grow as a scorer, even though he's been this good this early.
So Wiggins is playing really, really well to begin the year as well, up, you know, close to 24 points per game. And again, we can't stress enough, it's only been 3 games. It's too early to tell, but he looks fine. I mean, really, this Minnesota team, it's kind of, with as good as their top three has played, and Jang as well, it's kind of strange that they're 1-2. They had a great chance to win that first game against Memphis and obviously got their revenge last night with the Grizzlies sitting a couple key guys. But so going forward, what... You know, how does this dynamic work with Minnesota? I mean, can they have three, I don't know if I would say alpha dogs, but can they have three guys who are all, you know, on this path to be really, really good? Can they develop them all together? Can they play with each other? And can they keep them all long term?
I think keeping them all long term is
going to be
the easier thing, honestly. I think getting all the pieces to maximizing the pieces together is going to be the hardest thing because they're just all such unique talents and really none of them are distributors.
Right.
So you need that kind of perfect point guard to get them involved, or you sort of have to talk LaVine and Wiggins into being okay with kind of taking turns to the point where they're not going to get theirs every night, and you have and you run the team through towns. I mean, it's just it's very hard to construct a team where you have three all-star caliber players and none of them are primary ball handlers.
Right. And you know, I think, you know, you say a point guard who can distribute and get them all involved, like that should be Ricky Rubio, but I don't know if you can have that point guard out there who's not a shooting threat. Like, to me, that kind of that takes away, you know, what he brings as a distributor and a guy who doesn't need to get his shot.
I think really all you need is you need him to get to the point where he's hitting like 35% of his threes and he's willing to shoot when he's wide open. I think it could be done if he, even if he wasn't like a great 3-point shooter, as long as, you know, if you have those three main guys operating at such an elite level and you have a really, really good ball handler who's got excellent court vision and is running the offense, I think you can make it work without the point guard being a shooter, especially since those three guys, one of them being a center, can all shoot. So I don't think that's necessary, but I think you need to believe in that point guard to the point where he's going to grow with those three guys. Because if you keep switching it out and bringing new guys in, or you're not quite satisfied with the guy you have, then it gets a little trickier. What they need to do is they need to develop defensively the way we thought they would.
Right. You know, that's been the issue so far, and I think they'll get there eventually. All right, anything else you want to touch on from these last couple nights in the NBA before we get to prospect stuff?
No, I think I think that's good.
Okay. So you wrote an article that just went on the site earlier today, the Prospect Post, Scouting Joel Embiid. So we'll talk about that. And you also included kind of a look ahead at the 2017 NBA draft, your top 10 prospects for that, and we'll dive into that as well. But let's start with Embiid. I guess I'll just ask you a very general question, and you can kind of take it wherever you want. I mean, what was your overall takeaway, or some of your overall takeaways as you kind of went in depth on Embiid?
So I saw some things I didn't like from him in the preseason, and I don't know if it's just that teams don't have a full scouting report on him yet and don't really know how to defend him, or if he's actually made this many improvements this early on. But I mean, there's not a ton in his game that you can really complain about. And that's kind of crazy to say after only three NBA games. I mean, the two biggest issues I sort of have with him right now are he's extremely susceptible to double teams. Like if you run a second man at him, he just doesn't really know what to do. He's going to turn the ball over a lot. But teams haven't been doing that so far in the regular season, which I think you kind of got to assume they will in time. I mean, I don't think all these teams have really had time to lay out in-depth game plans, especially against a team like the 76ers, who they anticipate beating regardless, and knowing that Embiid's only going to play 20 minutes. And the other kind of flaw I think that he sort of has right now is he kind of thinks that he can put the ball on the deck a little bit too much and get to the rim. And when the defense doesn't get in his way and kind of make him go around them, then he's really good at scoring like that. But when they do get in his way, it leads to offensive fouls, leads to turnovers, leads to poor shots. So I think just kind of playing under control, especially in the half court, is going to be important. But offensively, I mean, the stuff he's doing in the mid-range is really kind of crazy for someone his size. I mean, I think you and I kind of agree that he's 7'3", 280, 290, even though he's listed at 7 foot, 250. Mm-hmm. And his best, what he's been doing the best offensively so far this year has been shooting in the mid-range. He's shooting 58.3% from there, and he's actually been kind of mediocre in close. He's hit two of his 5 3-point attempts, but those have both been like wide open looks from the top of the key. It's only five shots, so I'm not going to read too much into how good of a 3-point shooter he is. But the mid-range looks legit. I mean, he can shoot it off the dribble in there. He can use his size to sort of create space. I mean, there's just no way to defend a guy that's that big that's going to be shooting 18-footers off the dribble. I mean, I don't know what you would do to guard that other than, like I said, double-team him, and that's kind of what teams are going to have to start doing going forward.
Yeah, the ball handling has impressed me. That was something we didn't see a ton at Kansas, and you kind of have to jog your memory to even remember, you know, Embiid at Kansas. He only played 28 games. He was kind of a mystery then. You know, it really wasn't until the Big 12 season came around that, you know, that the you know, non-diehard Kansas fan really knew much about Joel Embiid. I mean, this is a guy who took 5 threes his entire college career, and, you know, now all of a sudden that's a part of his game. But you can see in the article you included a lot of, you know, video clips and how comfortable he is handling the ball. You know, he's not going to be a guy who's breaking ankles, you know, going coast to coast, but he catches, you know, 18, 20 feet from the basket. He'll go between his legs. He can cross over for a 7'2" guy. And, you know, you also have to remember he's being guarded by other 7-footers who aren't, you know, quick footed. It's easier to cross those guys up. Like, he's so smooth with the ball. It's not necessarily all that quick, but it's not awkward. It's not herky jerky like it is with a lot of big guys. And, you know, he kind of uses that to size up defenders. I mean, there's a clip in here where he spins baseline and just flips a floater up with his right hand as he's spinning the opposite direction. Like, there's not a lot of big men that can get that shot, let alone make that shot. So, I mean, I've been impressed with what I've seen. I mean, he has the highest usage rate in all of the NBA among players who are not named Jordan Hill or Jake Layman. Layman's number two right now.
I mean, that's high company right there.
Right, a cat go Cats, Jake Layman.
Jake Layman. I think, like what you said, like, he needs to be okay with not being super fast with the ball, like in the half court, because when he's one-on-one, he can take his time, be smooth, be, you know, very kind of deliberate, I guess, and he's just going to overpower people. That I have that clip of, like, Nikola Vucevic trying to guard him on the wing, no help comes, and he just kind of, it's sort of like the NBA version of, like, a bull rush. Like, he just kind of puts his shoulder down and just gets to the hoop, and Vucevic just can't do anything about it.
It was good D, honestly, by Vucevic. I don't know what else you can really ask. Like, he has him pinned basically against the sideline, and Embiid just takes another dribble, moves him back, and has an easy layup.
And he, honestly, you get the Hakeem Olajuwon comp so much. But I think when you're just talking about him in close, I think he reminds me a lot of Shaq in just how one guy just can't stop him. Like, when he gets the ball in close, I'm not sure how he's shooting so poorly.
He's smoother than Shaq, but he doesn't have that overwhelming, like,
he doesn't have
vertical
that,
power that
right,
Shaq
exactly.
had. Like, Embiid's not finishing these with, like, huge dunks that are borderline breaking the rim.
That's why the Hakeem comp doesn't work for me. That's why the Shaq comp kind of falls short, is because he's not – he gets there and then he does like a off the glass type of, you know, something that Tim Duncan would do basically.
Right.
But if it's Shaq or it's Hakeem, he's just going to get up and dunk over you.
And maybe he will once he, you know, I mean, it's easy to forget this guy's played three basketball games in the last like 3 years.
And this all just kind of at the end, it just comes down to the big health caveat. I think that they're doing the right thing with the way they're handling him this year. I think you have to kind of view him as like a starting pitcher that's had a major elbow injury. You work him back slowly. You kind of build up his minutes, like you'd build up a pitcher's innings. And I think they have to give him a bunch of strategic DNPs this year on like second nights of back-to-backs, third game in 4 days, those types of things. And they have to make sure that he's not playing 28, 30 minutes a game with any regularity. And then next year, let's hope he gets through this season healthy. Mm-hmm. Then next year, you can kind of start to take the training wheels off and make him, you know, that 30, 32 minute a game type of guy who can lead this team to wins, even if all he's got next to him is Ben Simmons and Dario Saric and whoever they get in this upcoming draft. I think that if he's playing 30 minutes a game for you, you're going to be able to beat a lot of teams if he's healthy.
Yeah, what I do like about Embiid is, even though he knows his situation, obviously medically, he knows his minutes restrictions. He gets where this franchise is at. Like, when he's on the court, he's playing like he's an established superstar in terms of commanding the ball, getting the ball and not always making the right play, but he's trying to make something happen every time. And that can be good and bad. And you see it with a lot of rookies, and Embiid is a rookie. What game was it? The OKC game a week ago was close at the end, and you know Oklahoma City ends up winning. But, I mean, down the stretch, it was just get it into Embiid, whether he was on the block, on the outside. You're running, and this is a team that doesn't really have a point guard in Philly, so that's part of it. But they were just – you never see a team dump it down to a big guy with a minute left in a tie game and just let him go to work. There just aren't that many guys in the league that are like that. And Embiid, to me, you know, you can say Davis, you can say Towns, like – Embiid's more of a true center to me than those guys are.
For sure.
And it's just his type of center. Like, the good centers in the league these days are the Tyson Chandler archetype. You know, can finish everything inside 3 feet, nothing outside of three feet.
Steven Adams has been called by some of the best center in the
exactly,
league.
Man.
Like, that's where the center position is right
now. Yeah, and it's not a knock on Steven Adams necessarily, but it's like if you transported Steven Adams back to, like, 1997, mm-hmm. he's like the 8th or 9th or 12th best center in the league.
Right, and well, and that clip you're talking about where Embiid spins baseline, that's on Steven Adams.
Yeah.
Steven Adams' number one quality, I think most people would say, is his defense, and he just doesn't have a chance. Like, I mean
again, it wasn't bad D. It's
right.
The same thing with Vucevic. It's just a better, like, that's how good Embiid is and can be. I can't wait. I mean, I hope later in the season, at least, he starts playing closer to 30.
And we didn't even talk about his defense. Like, he's averaging 4.5 blocks per 36. I included this one clip of him blocking Dwight Howard where he comes weak side. He's all over, like, it should be a foul. Like, it shouldn't be possible to block that shot without fouling him, and yet he somehow doesn't foul.
That's what's
him.
Been most, like, impressive. I mean, he had a chase down block on Oladipo at the end of that Oklahoma City game. It didn't really end up mattering, but he's not just blocking shots. Like, when I watch Hassan Whiteside play, he's just kind of vertical. Mm-hmm. He'll meet guys at the rim. He'll tap shots away. He'll swat. Like, Embiid's not getting these, you know, one-on-one meet me at the rim blocks. He's rushing across the lane to reach out and just tip it with his left hand. And like you said, it looks like he's following the guys, but then you see the replay, and he's able to contort his arms and contort his body to affect these shots or block these shots really without fouling. And that's what's most impressive.
And the NBA refs are already kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt on a lot of these calls. Like, a lot of these blocks, I don't think many players get away with them. Like, I've seen Giannis just get completely screwed over by officials because they don't realize kind of what he's capable of. I think Embiid's already just looked at as, like, a very established shot blocker in the league among the officials, which is good for him.
So to finish on Embiid, if he's not Shaq, if he's not Hakeem, I mean, is there a comp out there?
No.
Or if not, who is he a blend of?
I don't think there's a comp out there at all, really. I mean, I think you can only get about 50% of the way there, no matter who you're comparing him to. I guess, you know, maybe a combination of like Hakeem and David Robinson, and like,
he does have a little white side in him. He's not quite as athletic as Robinson or Hakeem. And, like, Embiid's a great athlete, but he's bulkier than those guys were. Like, I mean, Robinson was a complete freak.
I don't even know where to go with this, because I just don't think they're mm-hmm. I don't think you can get close with one guy. And the whole thing about him being able to shoot threes and, like, having this sort of advanced mid-range game, given where he's at as a player, makes it just sort of impossible, because then you want to start throwing guys like he's got some Karl-Anthony Towns, he's got some, it's just there's nothing that really makes sense if you start just throwing a bunch of names in there. I mean, I think he's one of those truly unique players that doesn't come along very often.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so looking ahead to the 2017 draft, this is going to be a fun one. I feel like we've gone through a couple drafts in a row now that have had some talent at the top. You know, you get your token college stars, your Denzel Valentine type of guys in every draft. And this is going to be an awesome year for college basketball, partially because of these freshmen. But this is going to be, you know, an absolutely loaded class. And, you know, you have your top 10 guys here. And, you know, the number one recruit in the country is at number 7. And, you know, part of that, Harry Giles, is the injury concern with him. But, I mean, that's legit how deep this class is. I mean, you even without those injury concerns, you could make a case for 5 or 6 other guys to go number one. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of track this throughout the college basketball season. I mean, last year it was basically You know, it was basically down to Simmons and Ingram. Even it was Simmons to begin the year,
right.
And then Ingram. You know, as every year somebody creeps up. You know, it was like, all right, Ingram's actually making this somewhat of a debate, but it was really always Simmons. And you know, it was kind of the same debate with Wiggins and Parker a few years ago. But I mean, this year we're going to have that scenario, but there's going to be seven guys who are, you know, week to week that could change.
Yeah, I think, and it's an awesome draft because there's so much diversity in terms of what position these guys play. Like, if you want a point guard, you're going to be able to get a pretty awesome point guard if you're picking in the top six. If you want a dynamic wing, you'll be able to get one of those in the top five. If you want a quality big man, you'll be able to get one of those. There's some stretch bigs out there. There's some combo guards. I mean, there's just a lot of everything, really, and it's going to be kind of interesting. I mean, teams might legitimately factor in need in the number one overall spot.
No, seriously.
Like, which almost never happens.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have Markelle Fultz number one. I mean, if you don't know who Markelle Fultz is, what's the closest comp? I mean, you don't ever want to say Westbrook, but I mean, this guy reminds me. It's kind of a Westbrook mixed with Emmanuel Mudiay for me.
Huh. I think he's just really tough to kind of pin down because of his size. Like, he's 6'4". He's basically a point guard in a two guard's body, but he can score. So, like, I don't know. I think, like, a score first point guard, but he's taller than most of those types of guys, I guess. I don't really have a good comp. I mean, maybe like Gilbert Arenas, like, I don't know.
I don't know if he's like, I mean, Arenas was such a good like pull up 3-point shooter. I don't know if he has that. I mean, I've seen Dwayne Wade comps with him, you know, that kind of but he has that body style. You know, I mean, he's not as ripped, I guess, yet as Dwayne Wade, but it's going to be fun because he's playing at Washington and they're not going to be a bad team, but this is going to be his team and he's going to have near triple doubles multiple times this year.
Right. And he has all the tools to be dominant on both ends. It'll be interesting to kind of see what his sort of interest level is on the defensive end. I think he's got the most tools, I think, of any of these players, and therefore to me kind of a really high ceiling but also a high floor, just because, like, even if he doesn't kind of live up to the hype, you're still looking at a likely top 10, top 12 point guard.
The point guards in this draft are the most fun, I think. Like, you have just some of the most unique prospects that we've had come through college basketball in 5-10 years, and they all kind of align. I mean, Markelle Fultz, like I said, he reminds me a lot of Mudiay, that athleticism, that size. Like, Mudiay didn't even play college basketball last year.
Want to go along with your Mudiay comp because I think Mudiay sucks.
Me too. But I think, like, body wise, athleticism wise, he looks like him.
If you want to throw a physical comp on him, then Mudiay is.
I wish Fultz was going to Kentucky or Kansas. I mean, Washington will be a lot of fun, but like he would be a John Wall level like star if he went to Kentucky. And it's kind of a shame that he's not. Luckily, Kentucky has like five other guys that could do that. But I mean, Dennis Smith is the other one. I mean, him and Fultz are kind of usually listed one and two in some order in terms of point guards in this draft, not necessarily number one pick, although they're both very much in contention for that. And then you have Lonzo Ball, who's kind of the opposite. These Smith and Fultz are both those attacking, uber athletic, you know, can do it all type of point guards, whereas Ball doesn't have the athleticism, but he's 6'6". He'll pull up from 5 feet behind the line. And I mean, he's been called the best passing recruit that some scouts have ever seen.
Yeah, I'm not as high on him as some places are, just because I think the jump shot is
ugly,
really, really ugly, and it needs to be overhauled. And it's hard to rank a guy high who needs his entire shooting mechanics.
Well, people
overhauled.
Say like, oh, well, he made it a lot in high school. It's like he did, but I mean, this is bad. It's not Sean Marion bad, but it's close.
It's worse. I mean, I think it's like Sean Marion's at least was like. It was gross, like the form was gross, but it was like he repeated it every single time. He got it off quick. Ball just lays a ton of bricks up there.
Well, he brings the ball all the way across his body, left to right, and kind of squares it in front of his face with a flick. You know, it doesn't get a lot of arc because it's a shot you can get when you're 6'6 going up against 5'11 high schoolers. But when you're being guarded by a 6'8 guy with his hand in your face, like that shot's not going to feasibly work,
right?
Whether you're making it or not.
And I think he's got the most development still to do amongst the top guys. I like Frank Nicolina out of France more than him. I think he's got an even more intriguing physical like just frame and size and length than even Fultz or Ball, because he's kind of got that sort of Sean Livingston-y kind of frame, a little bit shorter, but I mean just extremely long. He's got a pretty smooth jumper from what I've seen. He hasn't kind of gotten to the point where it's a consistent shot, but I think it'll get there. And very, very willing passer. So I mean he's definitely a point guard, even though he's kind of got the body of even like a wing. Just looks like a guy that could be an absolute star on both ends, and people aren't going to see a ton of him. Who do you like the most out of Josh Jackson and Jason Tatum? Because those are the two wings that everyone talks about as, you know, maybe they wouldn't go number one today, but they both could easily play their way into the number one spot. Yeah.
Josh Jackson is going to be a top five pick, I think, just because he's kind of the incumbent. You know, like he's a lot like Wiggins to me. Like, I mean, the Kansas comparison, or, you know, going to Kansas, I guess, is just kind of a coincidence. But he's one of those guys that, like, he's not like a huge, huge scorer necessarily, but like he's a freak athlete. He's a great defender. He's long. Like, I think he's.
My comp for him, at least in recent drafts, would be Jaylen Brown.
You think so?
Because of, like, I think he's going to go top five because...
I think he's better offensively than Jaylen Brown.
I've seen a lot of
T-Mac comps with him, and I think that's pretty spot on.
All right. I mean, Jaylen Brown, nobody thought there were really questions offensively until he got to college. And,
yeah.
But I mean, like, I just in terms of athletically, a guy like that on the wing isn't going to fall out of the top five.
Right.
Just like Jaylen Brown went number three just because of his measurements, basically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jackson's going to test off the charge. I do wonder. I mean, he's going to Kansas. He's probably best suited playing the two, especially right now when he barely weighs 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Kansas already has, you know, an experienced backcourt that they're not moving one of those guys to the bench. So, I mean, he's going to be playing the three. I think there's going to be games, much like Wiggins, where he scores 6 points and takes four shots. You know, which
I don't
is fine.
I don't think he's as advanced as Wiggins was. Like, he's probably a bit more assertive than Wiggins was, but
yeah,
Wiggins was just so smooth and everything just came so easy to him that he was going to play 28, depending on, you know, Bill Self obviously benched top prospects before. I could see Josh Jackson only seeing like 24 minutes a game, maybe 26 minutes a game, depending on what the need is. Tatum to me has some Wiggins in him, just in that he's such a dynamic scorer, but just does not pass at all. Like that to me kind of screams Wiggins.
I think he could have a Jabari Parker type of year for Duke, and maybe not quite to that type of, you know, separating himself as the best player, you know, and because he might not even be the best NBA prospect on this team. Like, I think Duke might have so much talent that Tatum's numbers won't be all that good, but I saw a vintage Danny Granger comp for him the other day, and I thought that was really, really good, the way he plays. Mm-hmm. Like, he's quietly dominant, I think, is something that you would use to describe him. Like, just one of those guys that isn't going to be throwing down, you know, windmill dunks. I mean, he's a good athlete, but he's not going to be making highlight plays, but he'll give you 12 points, 8 rebounds, you know, 3 assists, a couple steals, and a block. I mean, I think his floor is maybe the highest of any of these top guys, and that's saying a lot.
I think Fultz has the highest floor, but that, I think that to me is Tatum might just be such a black hole that he, unless he's scoring at just a crazy efficient clip, like, teams might not even necessarily want him if he just doesn't really play within a system. Whereas I think
he'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean,
that's never really an issue at Duke, is it?
I mean, I don't think Coach K would say you can't come here because you don't pass enough if it's it's a guy that's this good. Like,
right.
He'll try to make it work. I mean, Coach K is gonna probably make it work. I think it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens at the NBA level, and none of these guys have even played an official college game yet, so it's hard to say too much there. Mm-hmm. But there's some really interesting teams that are going to be picking near the top next year that can use just maybe that one more possibly franchise type of player, and they're going to get a chance to get him. I mean, the Magic, I think, to me, are a team that people thought was going to be kind of in the mid-30s. Now they kind of look like a team that might be in the mid-20s in terms of wins. They could obviously use an upgrade at point guard. They're going to have point guards available to choose from. The Sixers could use another scoring wing. Mm-hmm. They're going to have guys like that to choose from. The Suns don't really need anything necessarily, but they could kind of take best available. The Pelicans need a little bit of everything. The Lakers need it to fall in the top three.
The other thing is you don't have to be that bad in this draft. You know, and some of these players will separate themselves when the college season begins. But you can get like the eighth pick in this draft and land a point guard that would otherwise go like third in other drafts.
Right. Like to me, De'Aaron Fox out of Kentucky he's got like a lot of Brandon Knight in him to me. Yeah. And like you could basically get like another Brandon Knight with like the ninth or 10th pick in this draft.
And maybe later with him. I mean, you have your top 10 guys here. Nine are freshmen, and he's the only Kentucky guy in there, which is also crazy to me. We have all these big time freshmen, and you know, Kentucky has, I think, the number two class behind Duke this year. But they kind of swung and missed on all of like the top guys. And mm-hmm. Fox is probably the closest.
A lot of people love Malik Monk. I think he's going to do some crazy stuff, but I just,
I think he reminds me a lot of Ben McLemore, where it's like you see it like on tape, he looks awesome. Physically, he's awesome. He's an insane leaper. The shot looks great. But then in games, it just doesn't get put together.
I think he's more assertive than McLemore, but I definitely see that. I mean, I didn't put him in the top 10, so obviously I have some issues with him. But
he's going to be the most fun player to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in the country.
He's the best dunker. He has kind of unlimited range. I mean, he could have that mm-hmm. year that everyone's kind of talking about, but then people come draft time are like, well, here's what he can't necessarily do at the next level, and people are going to be surprised that he doesn't.
He could be one of those guys like this season. I could see him averaging like 12 points, 1.1 assists, and like 1.6 rebounds. Like, doesn't really do anything outside of score.
See, I could see him averaging like 16 or 17 points, and everyone just thinking that he's the best player on Kentucky, and then Fox goes
having
out of
a little
the
like
draft.
A Deron Lamb type of situation going on here. What about is it Adebayo? Bam Adebayo?
Yeah,
I started reading up on him and watching a lot of film on him last week. He is more impressive than I thought, and it's tough, you know, especially evaluating 7-footers who have like NBA bodies already as 17-year-olds going up against these poor white kids in these YouTube videos. But he reminds me a lot of Andre Drummond, maybe a little bit more fleet of foot already, I think, than Drummond is, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, I sort of have a bias against big men when there's this much guard and wing talent available. So like I didn't put him in the top 10, but I mean, I think out of him, Marquez Bolden out of Duke, I mean, one of those guys, you know, that they could kind of establish themselves this year as top six guys. I mean, even some guys that are coming back, the two guys on Indiana, I think one of
Thomas
those
Bryant like might be an end of the first round guy now with how I think he should have came out last year, because this draft is just so deep.
I think OG Anunoby is a candidate to play his way into the top 10. Like
I almost feel like the Victor Oladipo thing has been put on him too much, but like it would not surprise anyone if he made that same ascent. I mean, nobody thought Oladipo was going to go top four. Was he fourth mm-hmm. overall in that draft?
I mean, they're different players, but I mean, they have the same sort of college arcs in terms of how they've built up their draft stock. Mm-hmm. And I think if I were to kind of pick one, I have Ivan Rabb in the top 10, so I have him at 8, so he doesn't really qualify. But if I was to pick one guy returning from last year to play his way into that top 10 or so, I think he would be my pick.
Real quickly, what about Harry Giles? He should be the most celebrated recruit in this class. He's had three knee operations, and you know, to be fair, it's not like he's torn his ACL three times, but he just had a knee scope at the end of the summer. We're not really sure when we're going to see him, you know, full strength, no restrictions. If he's healthy, if the knee checks out, if he has a you know, good to great freshman year at Duke, is he the guy that has to go number one?
No, not at all. I think I think like we've talked about, I think there's just so much talent in this class that I don't think anyone who starts saying like in November or December or even January, February, oh, this guy, number one pick, like, then, I mean, you're crazy. Like, there's just too much talent here for anyone to kind of create that much separation that we should wait or that we should make conclusions before the combine, before the draft interviews and everything like that, that someone's going to go number one. The biggest question for me with Giles is just, is the explosiveness going to come back after mm-hmm. those surgeries? Because I think that was such a big part of what made him the top prospect in this class coming in, was just how, you know, he could jump out of the gym. He had that crazy motor, was really good at going end to end. I mean, if he loses a step or maybe doesn't quite get that same bounce back, then he definitely kind of loses a little bit, because I don't see him developing into a stretch. I mean, he's mm-hmm. got to be a guy that does a lot of damage down low, and maybe he just ends up being, you know, Julius Randle or something like that, yeah, which isn't that exciting.
I think he reminds me a lot, if things break right, of a more athletic Toronto Chris Bosh, where he could step out a little bit. You know, he wasn't the 3-point shooter that he became in Miami, but I mean, he was just a force end to end. You know, couldn't run a team through him.
You know, Ivan Rabb's my Chris Bosh guy.
Yeah,
in this draft, I think he's got
right.
A
if you
ton
forget
Chris
about
Bosh.
Rabb, I mean, yeah. He made a very questionable decision coming back too, given the talent. But I mean, is he your first non-freshman that should be going off the board
right now? Yeah,
I think so. I mean, it's hard to even say who. Somebody else could play their way up there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. OG could do it, but I mean, I think going in right now, he's the obvious mm-hmm. First non-freshman to
right.
come off.
I mean, even Grayson Allen. Like, the thing with Grayson Allen is like, he could have an insane senior year, or I guess I think he's only a junior.
Yeah.
I mean, he could average 25, 6, and 6, but like, I still don't know if anybody takes him above like 10.
I think he probably goes in the top 20. I don't know if everyone's even in agreement that he's that right now, but I think by the end of the year, he's just going to have such a solid year. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys that we have up here are going to play their way out of the top 20. Right. He's going to be sitting there at like 14, 15. Some team's going to take him. But even if he were to have like a crazy, crazy good year, just be the unanimous player of the year, I don't even think he goes top 10 because you're going to have that, well, you know, upperclassmen, you know, the Kaminskys and Buddy Hields before him haven't really panned out.
Come on.
We've got all these.
What do you mean it hasn't panned out? He's 3 games into his career.
He hasn't panned out. Let's face it. It was a bad pick.
Folks, it was a bad pick.
But yeah, I mean, there's just so much young talent in this draft that I just think it's going to be impossible for a guy like Allen to play his way into that top 10.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we'll keep checking in on prospects throughout the year. We're only like a week or two away from the real start of college basketball. I know Wisconsin was playing UW Stevens Point or something, or Platteville over the weekend. So I'm looking forward to games that actually count, but we'll keep checking in on these prospects. It's going to be a lot of fun. When are you leaving for Arizona?
I'm leaving my house tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
So, yeah. I thought we learned our lesson on flying out of places super early.
I don't have a choice. Flying to Arizona has been really, really a pain in the ass, because I'm flying out for this trip, and then I also got a bachelor party in spring training next year that I already bought tickets to. And
a rough life you lead.
And it was borderline impossible to find a flight for under 400, and we found one, but it did include this early departure time, a connector involved tomorrow, so it's really tough out there.
I'm sorry,
gonna have to get. When are we gonna get Roto Jet?
I think we are nowhere near acquiring a Roto Jet. Maybe
I think we're closer. I think we're closer.
All right, well, have fun in Arizona. We'll check back in next week.